three C's of critical thinking, creativity and collaboration be taught? Is it possible to teach students how to have an appetite for learning? Our guest this morning is the world-renowned neuroscientist, educator and author, Dr. Jared Cooney-Horvath. He's the author of 5 books and countless research articles. He's conducted research and lectured at Harvard University, Harvard Medical School, the University of Southern California and the University of Melbourne. Dr. Horvath says the most important 21st century skill our children should be learning is how to love learning, and this can be done. He's in New Zealand with support from the US Embassy for the AUT Project Connect Talk event tomorrow night. Jared Cooney-Horvath is in our Auckland studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Really good. Let's start with those three C's: critical thinking, creativity, collaboration. Are they teachable?
Oh, my goodness. We're going to dive right into the deep end here. Are they teachable? To a certain extent, yes. But the trick is to recognize that in isolation, they can't be taught. So things like critical thinking, like creativity, they're really tied to the unique field or information you need to use it to. So if you think about it, take something just like collaboration. I'm sure you, in a radio station as a host, have a very specific set of things that define collaboration in your field. Whereas me, when I'm in the lab doing research, totally different. Same word, collaboration, but I promise you the skills are very different. So we can teach the concepts, but you then need to ensure you tie those concepts down to the specific field you need to use them in. So unfortunately, there's no such thing as just general creativity that once you have it, congrats, you're creative everywhere. There's creative thinking, but then you need to adapt it.
And same as you say, for each of these skills, they are, well, context is relevant at the very least.
Yeah.
And therefore the ability to transfer the skill.
That's the tricky thing.
Is relevant.
Bingo. It's that transference, that ability. And I think a lot of parents out there and students and adults will all recognize this. It's that ability to learn something, say, in a classroom or at university, and then you step into the real world and all of a sudden you can't touch that skill anymore. And that's the transfer issue. How do I move it from the place where I learned it into the real world where I might want to actually employ it? And so that transfer problem, there is actually a solution for that. How do you move skills across? And it turns out that bridge then is learning. If you understand how the learning process works, then no matter where you move, so let's say you move from university into a career or into farming or to get a family, no matter what realm you move into, so long as you take and go through the learning process, you can then start to move your skills into that new realm. And of course, that takes a bit of time. Learning isn't the fastest thing in the world. But recognizing that, yep, there is, if I don't do this learning process, I'm going to struggle. But if I just go through this process quickly, then I'm going to be able to use my creativity, adapt my collaboration, my critical thinking skills. So learning seems to be the glue that holds it all together.
Which is why the love of learning or the thirst for learning is the one thing you really do need to hopefully emerge from an education system with, because it is never going to stop.
Bing, and that's what you really hope that everyone kind of leaves school with. And the scary thing is, if you think back, I don't know when you graduated. I'm a little older than some of your listeners, I'm sure. But when I graduated, I don't remember ever being taught how to learn or what the learning process was. It was just kind of this thing that happened by osmosis. And as I got older, I learned to do it better. Cool. But now we know that, no, it's a very clear process that we can teach students from a very young age so they can start to run that, have agency over learning from a very young age. And then so long as we can find their motivation, their inspiration, congratulations, you now have a process and you have the reason to do it. Welcome to the real world. The ones who learn are the ones who are going to be moving.
What is the process?
Oh, in the most simplified form, we can kind of boil it down to kind of three words. In the science of learning, we'll call it surface, deep, and transfer, but an easier way to understand it is kind of knowledge, context, and adaptability. So we start with knowledge. Most people try to skip this step, especially in this current generation now with the kind of the Google thing going on. Everyone thinks, well, why would we ever teach facts? We have access to facts on our phones, so kids should be learning skills. Sad fact is if you don't memorize and embody facts, you could have all the skills in the world, but you can no longer apply those skills because you don't understand the facts you're trying to apply them to. So as a simple example, let's take let's take something like critical thinking. Now, I imagine you wouldn't have gotten where you're at in your career without the skill of critical thinking and the ability to interview people. You can do this. So here we go. I'm just going to give you something that was published last week, and I want you to see if you can critically evaluate this. So 2 weeks ago, a paper was published in the Journal of Brain and Medical Research that argued that neutrinos in the medial temporal lobe spinning in a clockwise fashion generated a radio signal detectable by MRI machines. So using your critical thinking, I want you to tell me what went wrong methodologically with that study. Or, if it's accurate, what does that suggest about MRI analysis?
Do you want to know how far I got?
That is
it. Someone's done some research on how you do MRIs.
Boom.
That's as far as I got.
And that's a perfect example of you have a skill, but if you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, you can't use that skill. So that's why we say all learning has to start with facts. And there's this whatever pushback we've seen with facts where because kids can access them. No, knowing a fact is very different than looking at a fact. And if you don't take the time to lock down what is a neutrino, what is the medial temporal lobe, how does the brain work, how does MRIs work, if you don't know those facts, you can't use your skill. So all learning, love it or hate it, starts with knowledge. We have to get information into the system. Once you have knowledge in, now we can start to play, though. Here's where things start to get fun. So I think once you move from knowledge, which we'll call surface learning, then you can start to dive into deep learning, which we're going to call contextualization. How are you organizing that knowledge? How are you building larger concepts? How do the facts fit together to form a narrative? How do the facts change when you change context? So talking about the brain in a lab, very different than the way I might conceive of it in a biology classroom or in the surgery, the operating room. So now you contextualize, and then that last step is adaptability. That's where you now go, cool, now that I have the facts of my new realm, now that I've learned the edges of my concepts, how do they fit, how do they move, how do they bend, then you say, now all those skills I have, my critical thinking, my creativity, my collaboration, how do I need to adapt that to suit these new concepts, these new facts? And the person, the kids who can walk through that the fastest, knowledge, context, adapt, knowledge, context, adapt, those are the ones who just jump ahead. While everyone else is still kind of wondering, why can't I be creative? They're the ones who are inventing the next thing. They're moving on to the next product. Know the learning process, and all of a sudden, transfer starts to happen really fast.
Just explain the adaptation side again. This isn't where we are transferring to a different situation. Say you're moving from one career to another, or you're moving from working as an individual to working as a team. What's the adaptation part of the equation?
So this is where you realize something like collaboration or critical thinking or creativity, it's going to be uniquely applied to different situations. So what's a good way to, do you drive?
Yes.
Do you drive a stick shift or an automatic?
I can do either.
Oh,
but
manual.
I'm on automatic these days. That gives you my age.
So am I. I quit. I just quit trying. When I grew up in the U.S., I grew up driving a manual. And so there, the steering wheel's on the left side of the car and the stick shift is on the right side. Cool. I've locked this skill down. I know how to do it. I can do it in my sleep. I can eat a sandwich. I was going to say text. I probably shouldn't say that. Eat a sandwich, put on makeup, do whatever I got to do while still shifting. It's fine. Now, a couple years ago, I moved to Melbourne for a little bit to do some work. And now, magically, the steering wheel's on the right side of the car and the stick shift is on the left. Adaptability says this. Once I lock a skill down in a specific context, so in this case, I've learned my skill of driving and shifting on the left with the stick shift on the right. In order to move that skill now over to the other side of the car, it's not an automatic process. All of a sudden, I can't shift. It's just moving 6 inches and now using my left hand. But my goodness, I was so bad at it. That's why I started driving an automatic. I couldn't figure out how to coordinate everything. So the act of actually adapting a skill to a new situation once you learn how to do it requires practice and effort. It's like any other skill where it's now that I'm in this new realm, now that I am in a new job, now that I understand my new process, I need some practice and time drilling my skills so I can tweak them so they fit here rather than over on the other side.
Can you teach this discipline? Because it occurs to me that the more highly skilled you are at, say, driving a vehicle on one side of the road, in some ways the harder it is to make the change, or the more resistant you are, because it's such an embedded skill. And can this be a problem for someone who takes on a significant job change or has a whole new technology come through their workplace? Are we inclined to hold on to what we are very skilled at, whereas in fact what we need is the ability to constantly welcome the challenge of a very hard change?
Absolutely. So you just nailed it. You can assume the way the brain works is it swings between what we'll call active processing and automatic processing. So whenever you learn something new, it has to be active. You have to be paying attention. You have to be thinking. Cool. The more you practice and drill it, the more automatic it becomes. Driving. First time I learned how to drive, worst experience of my life. Oh, and by the way, I'm teaching my 17-year-old nephew how to drive now. Oh, my goodness. I feel so sorry for my parents. Now I realize just how hard it is to learn that. This kid who's really nice, smart kid just can't do it. He turns into an absolute flailing weirdo when he's behind the wheel. But once he gets good, once he gets up to my age, I promise you it's going to be automatic. But just like you said, when skills move from active to automatic, our ability to transfer and adapt those skills starts to narrow, becomes harder and harder and harder. So this is why, like, really good athletes, if you ever, like Tiger Woods, he had to throw out the first pitch. Really incredible golfer, when you put a golf club in his hands, one of the best athletes in the world, cat couldn't throw a baseball 90 feet. The thing just plopped down about 10 feet in front of him. Couldn't move his athletic skills from one to the next. Because he's locked his skills so down in one context, he can't consciously access them and adapt them. So just like you're saying, yeah, if you've been in a position for 30 years, and you get it, and you know what's going on, and in comes this new innovation, you're going to have to work so much harder to try and figure out what's actually going on with your skills so you can start to tweak them and change them and not just go back to your autopilot, opposed to the new kid who's just learning it right off the bat.
Bring this back to our classrooms then, even if they are classrooms or whatever the learning environment is, and to what teachers and educators are doing. If you are trying fundamentally to teach the student the skills of this process, get the knowledge, the contextualization of the knowledge, the adaptation and transfer of the knowledge, what are you doing in the learning environment to make that happen?
Oh, so this is where now teachers, I love this. What we've just outlined is the science of learning. This is how human beings learn. Now you've got the craft of teaching. How do you actually walk people through this process? It's one thing to know the process. It's another thing to actually lead others through it. And that's why I think teachers are absolutely incredible. Their ability to do this, whether they know they're doing it or not, is phenomenal. So what you'll tend to see with most teachers is this idea of, cool, there are some skills that we want to lock down, that we want so automatic, like number recognition or word recognition, that we don't care if you can't transfer that to Latin or to Mandarin. So some skills they just lock down. They drill and lock down within the first 3 years. After that, you'll notice what they start to do is they start to change context really quickly as soon as kids starting to become automatic. So they'll introduce a new topic. Kids will be confused. They'll work on it for like a week or two. Once the kids start to get really good at it, they'll shift gears. And all of a sudden, they'll use that same topic but in a different context. Remember that math thing we were doing over here with numbers? How can we apply that to this history lesson? How can we apply that over here to chemistry? And so long as they keep jumping context like that, what that does is that keeps the skill malleable. It never allows you to get fully into automatic zone. It kind of keeps you in that active zone where kids are now, they're getting this knowledge and they're never getting to the Tiger Woods spot where it's just blindly do-do-do-do-do. They're keeping it alive. They're keeping it active with the idea then that when they move out of school or when they get to the final exams where there's novel information, a situation they've never come across, some scenario where they've never seen before, their skills are still malleable enough that so long as they approach that situation with the learning lens on, they should be able to adapt their skills and make it work for them.
You want a mix, though, of the automated and the transferable, don't you? Because you want something to be practiced to the point where you're very good at it, and you can concentrate on something else. So how do you sort that mix?
So there's where you get to define that kind of what I would say context by context by context. There are some realms where you just, exactly like you said, if you don't lock a skill down, you can't go anywhere further. If I didn't lock driving down, I wouldn't be able to drive, period. If I didn't lock number recognition down, I couldn't do higher order math. So there's where a nice sweet spot comes, and this is where I think teachers are really good at discerning what are those skills that I'm okay with you not transferring necessarily, and then what are those skills that I need to keep alive, keep active, so when you move out. So you tend to see they lock down the foundation skills pretty hard, pretty early. And it's the higher order thinking stuff when we start to talk about what does it mean to go to war? What does it mean to create a piece of art? What does it mean to write a novel that reflects the human condition? Those things they try and stay open, the function, the form of a novel, as opposed to just the construction of writing. Here's letters, here's words, here's spelling, here's grammar. So they, and there's no, I wish there was a hard answer, but there still seems to be this sweet spot of, are there enough skills that you can lock down to build up that I'm okay with you not transferring out? And then where do I want to keep things open?
Jared Cooney-Horvath is our guest. He is a world-renowned neuroscientist, educator, and author in the country at the moment, with support from the US Embassy for the AUT Project Connect talk event. 25 minutes past 10, it is on 9 to noon. Does this work for every child? What about the exceptional child? What about the learning different child, learning differently child? Do the same principles apply, or do you need to find different pathways to achieving the same principles?
Oh, see, this is what I like. When you get down to the learning process, everyone is exactly the same. There, unfortunately, as much as I hate to say it, or no, actually, I kind of like to say it, there is no such thing as an exceptional brain. When you get to the base level, all brains work the same, and the learning process works the same from surface through deep through transfer. The difference is kind of what you were saying, what tools, what doors do I need to go through, what windows do I need to open to make sure you can engage with and go through this lesson. So give me a deaf kid and a blind kid. Clearly, I can't use the same material to teach them. But at the end of the day, whatever material I do use, they still have to go through the same process. They can't jump ahead to deep without going through surface. They can't do transfer without having conceptualization in place. So the process is the same. It's just what tools do we need to engage the student? And beyond that, how much time do we need? So I think this is one of the big things we're kind of playing with now is some people will zip through this, especially in some fields. Like my brother, I don't know how he does it, but when it came to math, man, he just zips through it. When it came to writing, no, he needs his time. So how we organize now classes in schools to say, well, cool, everyone will get there. There's no demonstration we've ever seen that a kid can't learn anything. With practice, with the right strategies, with the right flow, every kid can learn everything. It's just some kids might need more time. How then do we give them that time if we need to move them on to the next class or move on to the next content or move on to the next grade? And there's where we start to see kids who all start pretty much exactly the same in kindergarten really quickly start to diverge. And the kids who are moving fast keep going, and the kids who move slow just start losing more and more and more.
Whether it's a window or a door or whatever analogy you want to use, is really the entry point always the same? Motivation and one's concept as a learner, one's belief in oneself as a learner.
I love that. You can always say, if I ever got to just teach kids one thing, like you get to work with my students and you get to give them one principle. It's exactly what you just said there. I'd say, know who you are and what your passions are as a learner. Get your story right. Step one is that motivation. And the big buzz term going around now is growth mindset, but whatever you want to call it, it's you have to believe that you can learn anything. And honest to goodness, there's zero evidence out there that people can't learn. Every human being can learn everything. You need to believe that, and you need to put in the work later. That's down the track. But you need to believe that, and you need to know why you want to do that. Once you have those two things in place, then you'll want to engage with this stuff. But so long as you're asking the question, why is this important? Why does this matter to me? Oh, I can't do that. Oh, I'm a girl. I can't do this. I'm a boy. I can't do this. Those are the things that no matter how hard you try, those stories will impede any progress you try and make down the track. So get your story straight first.
Let's look at why people can struggle with that.
Yeah, yeah.
We see it even with the brightest kids when they go to sit an exam and blank out. So let's use that as one example. And we're preparing for exams right now, some kids. But I'm wondering if that's almost a permanent state for the child who struggles or has a poor concept as a learner or has an unrecognised impediment to their learning. Yep. Are they in that same state of mind all the time? They're not in the right part of their brain to be able to do the learning because they're stressed.
Yeah, so you've got kind of two aspects to that. You've got the stress angle, which will, once stress gets prolonged or really super high, I guess we can call it, yep, there's no learning and thinking is going to be going on until you abate that stress response. So that's kind of your mind blank moment where you're cruising along, everything's fine, and then boom, something happens, you get your mini panic attack. All you got to do in that situation is abate the stress response. If that means step away, if that means deep breathe, you do what you got to do to stop that before you dive back in.
Including in an exam, just pause. When you feel like you can't remember anything that you're being tested on right now, even though you know you've learned it, you just pause.
Just step back, let it go. In the time, a lot of kids get really worried and it starts to exacerbate the stress when they go, but if I slow down, I won't. The amount of time it takes to kill a stress response, about 30 seconds of just concerted breathing, eyes closed, relaxation, the amount of time you'll save not just trying to struggle through it is so much better. So don't worry, you're not going to lose that much time just stopping. Pull away. And we always say, too, when you go back, don't go back where you started. Go back somewhere else where you've already been. So get your mind back on track by going back to questions or a question, re-answering that, just get back on track and then let yourself coast back in. The good news about the stress response is cool. Those, we know we can stop those and go back. The deeper problem are the kids with, it's not a stress response, it's a full-on story. So the way the brain works, go back now to this idea of what we've got kind of, I've already introduced you to active versus automatic processing. There's another level of the brain, which we call top-down versus bottom-up processing. Now, bear with me, this is going to sound weird, but we always think that the brain just kind of takes in the world and analyzes it, and that's reality. Signals come in through your senses, the brain chugs away, there you go. We now know this isn't true. We've got this thing called top-down processing, whereby you push back. It doesn't matter what signals are coming in. You use your expectations, your stories, your memories, your understanding of the world to push back, and that changes what you perceive. We taste different things. We hear different music. We read different books. When we now know we're not being flippant, we're very different based on what story, what pattern we're using to push back with. So give me one of these kids who has a story that because I am blank, I'll never be able to learn. There's no stress involved anymore. Literally anything I try and give them, they will push back and that story will make it gibberish. We did a fun study like this where give me a kid who says, I can't do math. They study math for 5 hours, say, and we can watch their brain physically change while they're studying, which shows that they're learning. But as soon as they stop studying, their brain reverts back to normal really quickly. So nothing got stuck. It was as if the process of learning just could not stick because the story wasn't letting it. But give me that same kid, change the story to, I can learn math. They study for 5 hours, their brain starts to change, and it tends to hold longer. It's now just because they have a story that says, I can engage with this. The information comes in, the story allows it in, and all of a sudden we see growth. So this isn't a stress thing. This is a full-on belief, attitude. I just keep going back to story issue. Who do you think you are as a learner? And that will dictate what impact learning has on you.
What part of the brain are we in that is causing that kind of impediment? Is it distracting the brain from the deeper learning? The story, I can't learn, I can't. Muddles the learning process. What's going on?
So that's, we tend to say it's not a spot in particular, but it's pretty much, we can just say your prefrontal cortex, that part of the brain that separates humans from the animals, the bit that only we got. This bit of the brain works by sending signals back to the rest of the brain, and we now know to cells outside of the brain, and tweaking how all of that functions according to our expectations, according to how we think the world should be working. So you could assume a kid from about birth to five, the reason they're so cool and engaging and because it's pure input. They don't have any frontal lobe stories to send back and change. So everything they taste, everything they see, it's fun, it's interesting, it's exciting. But once you get to our age, we have such a hardcore story of how we think the world should be that anytime a signal enters a system that deviates from that, our frontal lobe just simply pushes back, changes our system so that we see it, smell it, taste it as we think it should be. So unless there's massive discrepancies, once you get to our age, we tend to live in our stories more than in reality.
That's what memory is.
Bingo. And that's why we have all these systems. Because if you think about it, imagine having to leave the house and rediscover what leaves are and what sunshine is and what wind is every day. The fact that we can just build a prediction of what weather is, that's what allows us to get out and keep moving forward.
If, however, we want to change or work against that or exercise a muscle that combats that tendency as we get older, how can we do that? It's harder to, I think this is why people get fixed in their opinions or fixed in their views, just the reason you've been saying, I've got this story and it works for me. But if you want to proactively stay open to the kinds of, it's almost painful, isn't it, sometimes,
yes,
a challenge to your mental set of facts and reality, what can you do to keep limber?
So that's where you've got to access your, if you ever want to change a story, you have to access that active learning part. You have to get out of your automatic processing your story, and you have to go what we'll call live. You have to zoom into the present. Now, just like you said, the biggest problem with that is it feels gross. If you get to come to one of our sessions, we're having a session down in Wellington on Wednesday, I'll put everyone in the room in the mode of active thinking. Most people hate the sensation. It feels uncomfortable. It feels scary. Some people say they get nervous. The biggest impediment then is to recognize that that sensation, which you think is gross, that is the sensation of growth, of learning, of changing your story. You don't get that sensation, ain't nothing going to change. You're back in your normal route. So we say, how do we get people into that mode? The easiest way to do it is through errors. When you screw up, when a discrepancy between your story of the world and the actual world, when that discrepancy is large enough, you don't have a choice. That coder, which we'll call that active learning, kicks on immediately. And you're in this moment where the entire system says, let's update your story. Because biology doesn't know. When you make a mistake like that, biology thinks it could be deadly, so we better update. You'll never learn better, faster, quicker than right after you screw up. But only if you choose to stick in that gross sensation, which most people will just go, no. I don't like this, back to normal.
It hurts, yeah. So you need to be prepared to go outside of that mental comfort zone, which makes me ponder on the fact that our world is led by people who are many decades into the process of being comfortable in their fixed worldviews.
They absolutely won't push back. you want to hear something weird? Do you have 30 seconds?
Sure.
I was thinking about this the other day. So remember, we move from knowledge into context. So we move from facts, which we tend to say are right, wrong, yes, no, into concepts, which we say are just, how are we organizing those facts? How do those facts stick together? Most debates, so far as I can tell historically, have been at the conceptual level. We're not arguing, debating the veracity of facts. What we're arguing is, how do you group those facts to make meaning? You interpret them this way, I interpret them this way, let's see how this plays out. And with the new generation, I've seen that debate shift to the facts themselves. So rather than how do we organize facts, the debate is purely on veracity of yes-no answers. It is happening, it's not happening. This and this. And I wonder if that shift backwards to debating about knowledge is one of the things that's just kind of impeding progress or making us all feel awkward at this time. Because I don't know that you can debate knowledge. I know you can debate concepts, but knowledge, I'm very confused about this new movement.
It's a little bit out of order, but I am curious, given your starting point is knowledge, surface knowledge and then deeper knowledge, which I guess is where you begin to work your knowledge.
Yep, yep.
Where do you stand on things like memorization and rote learning? Is there a role for it?
Oh, you skipped that stage at your own peril. I can't tell you how many schools I work in that went straight into deep. They said, well, we don't need to do memorization. We don't need to teach content. We need to teach thinking. And I always, whenever I go into the schools, I say, I'll see you in 5 years when your kids aren't really learning. Because you can't skip that first stage. You can get through it really quickly, but you can't skip it. So if you don't take the time to actually internalize, embody, memorize facts, you have nothing to go deep with. And this brings us back to our initial point when I talked about the brain and your critical thinking. You've got skills out the wazoo, But if you don't take that first step where you go, cool, I just need to lock these facts down in order to start organizing and thinking about them, then you're just spinning your wheels.
So this idea that kids won't ever have to memorize stuff because they can just Google it, have we swung from too much rote to being at risk of too little rote?
Bingo. Then that pendulum's got to sit right in the middle. I think school's got to be more than memorization, but it can't be exclusively, but that still has to play a role in it if we want to get to that deep learning and that transfer stuff. So I would just ditch it at your own peril. This is what I like is I think a lot of schools try and kind of really angle off, like we're the knowledge school or we're the context deep learning school or we're the concept school. You can't be the school. You got to be all them schools. Once you know the process of learning, you realize there's no one answer out there. You've got to use all those tools and just know when to apply each tool, each curriculum, each pedagogy when that time is right for your students.
Thank you, Jared.
You can't do a thing. It's all things.
Thank you. Jared Cooney-Horvath, who is in New Zealand at the moment. As we said, he's a renowned neuroscientist, educator and author, and has lectured at Harvard, Harvard Med School, University of Southern California, University of Melbourne, author of 5 books. He is here with the support of the US Embassy for the AUT Project Connect talk event tomorrow night, and you can see a link to that event on our webpage, rnz.co.nz/9 to noon.